Researchers at the University of Toronto have just discovered a link between our Indigenous communities in Canada and the Irish people, taking us all the way back to 1847. Professor Mark McGowan was leading the discovery. He's the professor of history and Celtic studies at St. Michael's College at the University of Toronto, and he just walked into the studio. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Okay,
thanks for having me.
Let's get into this discovery. Like, what exactly did you find?
Okay, so interestingly enough, these documents had always been there, and in fact, some of them were online, and an archivist in Ottawa, we found out a year and a half later, had done some work in them. But what we did find was that in 1847, because of the devastation in Ireland, Black 47 in Ireland, there was an international relief set up. So everyone from the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire to Tom Thumb donated to this relief. And so did the Choctaw and the Cherokee in Oklahoma. I always wondered what happened in Canada with Indigenous peoples here, completely not in the regular historical records. So what we found as we were moving through the documents, and this is hundreds of digital pages of correspondence, was that we found that Thomas Anderson, who was at the time the head of the Indian Department, as they called it, in what would now be Ontario, sent out a message on St. Patrick's Day, so March 17th, 1847, inviting, imploring the Indigenous peoples in his department to consider making a donation to Irish famine relief. And we found that they did, and they did in a very startling way.
Wow. And just bring, you know, our listeners up to speed. You think back to 1847. I mean, this potato famine, how bad was it?
So, I mean, the blight attacked Ireland in at least 17 counties in 1845. And everyone thought this has happened before. But in 1846, the blight affected all 32 counties and virtually destroyed the potato crop, which was the staple for many, particularly in the south of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So just to put it into perspective, there were 8 million people on the eve of the famine who lived in Ireland. At least a million died, and another 1.5 to 2 million emigrated. And to this day, the population of Ireland has never recovered to that 8 million mark.
Wow. Wow, so huge a part of their history.
Absolutely.
So you found this Indigenous response, and when we look here at what was not yet even Canada, what was it like for the Indigenous groups living here?
So the Indigenous groups that had been contacted were really restricted to reserve lands, and those reserve lands, you know, from Lake Huron right through to the Windsor Corridor, out through Tiandanega, which was a Haudenosaunee Mohawk reserve near, well, what would be Deseronto today, near Belleville. The largest group that was contacted was the Six Nations Haudenosaunee of Grand River, and they actually gave £25, which was the equivalent of 100 American dollars. And every band responded, Molly, in very similar ways. First, their distress at hearing about what had happened, and many of them, quote, to their white brethren, in terms of starvation. Secondly, that they met in council. So they gathered together in each one of these bands to deliberate.
To think about it. How can we help people?
How can we help? And then they all unanimously agreed and said that the Governor General at that time, Lord Elgin, could take from their annuity, that is the monies that were coming to them on an annual basis in exchange for their lands, that they could take a sum out of that to give to their distressed brethren. And each one of them to a nation said that we would give more, but we are poor ourselves. In fact, the Mississauga of the Credit were in the process of being moved from their traditional territory at the mouth of the Credit and were looking at homelessness for the most part, yet still. Sawyer and Jones, who were the chiefs represented, gave a substantial amount of money to this famine relief.
Yes, reached out to complete strangers when they themselves were having a tough time. I want to play a clip from an elder from Saugeen Ojibwe Nation, Duke Redbird, who spoke with Talia Ritchie, who put this feature together, and it just gives you an idea of, you know, even him learning about this discovery.
So the Anishinaabe and the Haudenosaunee people were as generous as they could be, even though our people were in pretty desperate situation themselves. But it was an act of kindness, and it was an act of honoring the treaties that we have with our people called our white brethren who were suffering in Ireland at that time.
What a powerful clip. You know, I also think about these discoveries, and while they're amazing, you know, to know in today's day and age, I think about sometimes how painful they can be for First Nations communities learning these things so late. You know, and on our road to reconciliation, so much of Indigenous history has been erased or put to the side. Do you think that that could have been a part of that?
I think it was just overlooked. Duke and I have worked together on this, because this is not just an Irish story. This is an Indigenous story, mm-hmm. and it has to be told from both perspectives. And I think one of the things that we look at in these letters is that, particularly from the Anishinaabe peoples, they sign it with their totem, which the English would have seen as a signature, but it wasn't.
Yeah, it's like a little bird on the letter.
It could be a bird, it could be a caribou, it could be a crayfish. I mean, whatever totem was representative of that clan. And it's a sense of peoplehood, it's symbolic of their law, and it was the way in which they signed the treaties with the crown. And that triggers a thought. And that thought is that, why did these people in their poverty, you know, give their empathy, yes, their compassion, but they understood their treaties as being a reciprocal relationship with the people of the crown. And when one part of that body was in trouble, they saw it as, through their eyes of a treaty, as being something important that they contribute to, that they were in relationship. In fact, the Mississauga of Curve Lake, then Chemung Lake, you know, even mentioned that their good relations with their settler neighbors was one of the reasons why they responded in kind, that they were all part of, well, as they called it, the Great Father's treaty, and so they imparted this money to Lord Elgin as part of their treaty responsibility. Many of us only wish that the British and their successors had reciprocated in the way in which they honored these treaties.
Let me ask about, you know, we're not far from Ireland Park, very close to us, right by the waterfront here in Toronto. You know, I've been there many times. I have like a group that goes and salsas and uses that space, and I've never really noticed those statues before, but they really signify even a change to how Canada was looking at Irish people and looking at them during that time. I mean, do you think that that set the precedent for so much of even what our country stands for in terms of immigration and refugees?
Well, certainly when you realize, and I was the historical advisor to the park, that a city of 20,000 people roughly in 1847 welcomes 38,000 refugees. I mean, almost twice its population. It's staggering when you think of the enormity of the responsibility that Torontonians took upon themselves. And of course, that particular park is the companion park to a small installation at Customs House Quay in Dublin, which is called The Departure. Same sculptor, Rowan Gillespie, sculpts The Arrival here in Toronto. One fewer statues when you go back and count them, Molly, but a pregnant woman, symbolic of hope. Hope that in this new country, they could actually have a future for themselves and for their families.
A minute here, Professor. You know, what is your greatest takeaway from this enlightenment?
I think my greatest takeaway from this is all of those untouched pieces of history that we have yet to discover, but in particular, looking at the Indigenous peoples as part of the fabric of our history, not an add-on, but as deeply engaged in some of the episodes where they have been essentially omitted, sometimes by acts of commission, sometimes by acts of omission. In this particular case, I think it's an important path, as Duke says, on our journey to discover the truth, and only through truth will we have reconciliation.
It's a long road, but it's an important one. All these are pieces. Professor McGowan, great to have you here today.
Lovely to be here. Thank you.
Mark McGowan is a professor of history and Celtic studies at the University of Toronto. He was one of the lead researchers on a study that discovered a link between our Indigenous communities in Canada and the city's Irish community.